Blog Talk Radio.
Forbidden archaeology, forgotten history, divination, magic, cryptozoology, UFOs, nature, science, and spirit. All this and more right here on the Main Street Universe Radio Network.
The honeybee has a long tradition of being worshipped and venerated as a symbol of the goddess in many ancient civilizations. Some of the oldest images of bee goddesses date back 10,000 years or more. For example, the Anatolian mother goddess wearing a beehive-styled tiara confirmed that this was the goddess's exalted status as queen bee who streams with honey in this early Turkish society. Tonight on Green Magic, Green Medicine, we will be discussing different things that bees make, propolis, honey, and other things, and their contributions to humans. Join us in our circle.
The full moonlit nights, an infant cries in the great void of silence before we knew time. A miracle spawned the dawn of life. Hear all the stories of how we came to be. Our legends, myths, and our hero themes that share the secrets of our cosmic seed. Spin round the starlight, O ancient sun. Spin round until a new day has come. O mother and father, where do we come from? Day and night, black and white, the great divide.
Welcome to Green Magic, Green Medicine. My name is Daniel Michael, and I'm the founder co-creator of the Main Street Universe Radio Network, and your hostess this evening is, of course, Ms. Susan Weed. And I just want a quick reminder for everyone that Main Street Universe is a network of six shows. This one, Green Magic, Green Medicine, with host Susan Weed, Tuesdays at 10 p.m. Eastern Time. Main Street Universe, the flagship show, the one that started it all, with myself and associate producer Janice R. White, at 9 p.m. on Wednesdays, all of this Eastern Time. Then on Thursdays, Uat Daul with your hostess, Queen Mother Imaku of the Kemetic tradition, reminding everyone that Egypt is, in fact, in Africa. That's 2 p.m. Eastern Time, our one daytime show. A little later in the day, on Fridays, 5 p.m. Eastern Time, Mr. Kevin Baird with the show Walking on the Sidewalk, a Horizon Oracle's Journey. Kevin is the creator of the Horizon Oracle deck, as well as an artist. He can be found at www.templeofgaia.com. And then Fridays at midnight, we have Activating Compassion in the Midnight Hour with Jesse Ann Nichols-George. And Jesse is the author of four books, Activating Compassion and its workbook, as well as You, Me, Life Dreams, and its accompanying workbook. So midnight, Activating Compassion in the Midnight Hour. And then on Sunday evenings, we have Mr. Darren Boucare with his show Spiritual Insight, and Darren has been on the Ellen DeGeneres Show. He's a reader at Marie Laveau's House of Voodoo in the magical city of New Orleans, and he has some interesting things going on in his life right now, but check him out. Call in for a reading from Darren Boucare, a sought-after reader in New Orleans and other places, 7 p.m. Eastern Time, and then our show on Monday evenings, 10 p.m. Eastern Time, is Randy Goldberg, a Vedic astrologer, with the show Science of Light. So that makes up the shows on the Main Street Universe Network. And I do see Susan Weed is here. I will turn on her microphone. Welcome, Susan. I saw it was
green blessings. Once again, a delight to be with you. What an incredible lineup of people at the Main Street Universe.
Absolutely. It's been a really interesting experiment putting it all together and having all these folks join in and be part of it and on their time. And it's one interesting thing I've noticed is that everyone on the network, because I've been in many musical bands and many artistic projects before, and everyone on this network, they're all go-getters. They're all doing something, and they're doing something interesting, and they just, there's not a lot, there's no, almost no drama at all, and they just all just sort of, they understand, and we're all in this together, and we're, and they're all go-getters. So it's a great bunch of people to have met, and some I already knew, and to work with.
Well, thank you. Thank you. It's wonderful to feel part of yet another web. And my one of the things that I often say is that we're reweaving the healing cloak of the ancients.
Oh, I like that.
And each one of us represents a thread in that weaving. And we kind of, you know, make our own determination as to, you know, are we going to be one of the warp threads that are often invisible and not seen but hold the whole thing together? Are we going to be that flashy little patch? You know, what's our function? But the weaving needs it all.
Yeah, true. It all plays a part.
Each one of us to be strong, each one of us to be a strong thread in the weaving. You know how it is with a favorite garment. There comes a time when one thread gives loose. And soon it's something you can only wear at home.
I knew that well. I do construction work.
Oh, yes, okay.
I'm an electrician also. It's part of what I do.
Yeah. And so keeping the networks going. And honeybees are about networks. We talked last week about honey and covered a lot of really, to me, fascinating things that we can do with honey medicinally. Several people called me up and said that they had tried honey facials and they were great. And, you know, wow, that's, you're really going to spoil what's going on at the cosmetics counters there where they're selling you, you know, these enormously expensive things, none of which really do as good a job as honey in really making your face look wonderful. And we talked about how honey then can really be a tremendous healer for the skin surface, where the surface is abraded or eroded or burned or ulcerated or hurt in some way. And what a great wound remedy honey is, and not just for little wounds, but for really big and persistent and bad wounds, too. And it's even now being used in hospitals. And from there to the mucous surfaces of the body that the respiratory system, especially the throat, benefits enormously from honey. And it's one of the reasons that herbalists are so fond of having honey in herbal teas, because you get that dual medicinal action, the action of the herb and then the action of the honey as well, and how that really spreads through the digestive system with the honey mellowing and soothing and being a nourishing food, with one caveat, with one warning, and that is not to give honey to children under a year old because it can contain the spores of botulinus, which can give rise to botulism, which can be a fairly deadly poison for a young child. And I mentioned last week when we were talking that honey is one of the most ancient of the remedies. And you think about the difference between, like, honey and the thousands and thousands of years of people using honey as a healing remedy and using honey as a sweetener, and then contrast that to white sugar. And the short amount of time that we've been using white sugar, and that we have come to the point where we are actually beginning to look at white sugar as something that is quite injurious to us, especially injurious to our hearts. Studies, however, have found that regular consumption of honey can create a healthy heart.
Wow.
So we have a situation in which we have a sweetener, which is ubiquitous, and yet appears to actually increase our risk of heart disease, And then another sweetener, honey, which actually lowers LDL cholesterol and total cholesterol. We think about how many people are on cholesterol-lowering drugs, and we could say to them, eat a spoonful of honey instead. Honey is also an anti-inflammatory. And a rather startling truth that we know about the heart and inflammation is that the person with low cholesterol and the person with normal blood pressure but with high inflammatory markers is more likely to have a heart attack than the person with low inflammatory markers and high cholesterol and high blood pressure. The high inflammatory markers are more and more being seen as the real risk factors for heart disease. Certainly blood pressure contributes to it. Certainly cholesterol plaque in the blood vessels contribute to it. I'm not denying that, but I am saying that it is the inflammation that goes along with those things that actually seems to be the cause of the heart attacks. As a matter of fact, honey is such a powerful anti-inflammatory that it reduces inflammatory markers like homocysteine and C-reactive protein. As we look more and more at inflammation in the blood vessels, we have found more and more ways to measure that inflammation and to get a better reading of what's going on. Now, C-reactive protein is a pretty easy blood test to do. And the homocysteine, the blood test is, from what I read, fairly inaccurate. A hair test, they got an almost, you know, perfect match up with the higher the level of homocysteine in the hair, the greater the risk for heart attack. Despite any other factor, whether or not the person had had a heart attack, whether or not the person had had a stroke, whether or not they were diabetic, the markers for inflammation more and more we are seeing as the thing that does in our hearts. And honey is an anti-inflammatory strong enough to reduce the inflammatory markers like homocysteine and C-reactive protein. Drugs do not do a very good job of reducing these inflammatory markers. And honey, I often laughingly tease, people sometimes say, oh, well, you know, it's such an effort to be healthy, and you have to eat such terrible foods to be healthy. And I say, well, no, actually, you know, you have to eat things like chocolate and honey, and it's, you know, having a good diet. Really, really be sweet.
We talked about butter, too, once on the show.
Hi, butter, you know, wow. There's just
not so,
so
bad.
Many wonderful foods. Avocados, olives, olive oil. It's fantastic. So I was interested to see an article talking about how honey affects gut flora. And I'm wondering if this might be an even kind of deeper link down behind the heart attack connection with the white sugar, is that the white sugar might feed gut flora different than what the honey feeds. And as the honey feeds those gut flora, it does several things. First of all, it really brings up the absorption of minerals. So when there's honey in the diet, we have stronger bones because the honey is feeding the gut flora that gets the minerals out of our food.
Wow.
And the honey also increases our ability to make use of the organisms in fermented foods that we eat. It's almost like the honey is like a little bridge for them. Here's these organisms. We've eaten them from our food. And the honey says, I'll feed you for a little while until you find a place to live.
Mm.
So the idea of putting honey in yogurt or a little honey in your sauerkraut is a really sound idea. I was just talking with Zsuzsanna Budapest, and she was talking about growing up in Budapest during the war and how, you know, really frightening that was for her, and how she was able to go out into the country and to escape that, and the sweetness of it, and the sweetness of the honey, and the memories then that that brings back. And I find that that's true for a great many people, that honey is very evocative of sweet memories and happy memories. And that's one other thing that we know, and that is that sweet memories are good for the heart, and sweet memories reduce inflammation in the body. So I love how multidimensional honey is. I also promised that I would talk a little bit about propolis and royal jelly and pollen and beeswax. These are things that are made or collected by the bees. Pollen is, of course, produced by flowers. And the male part of the flower, the stamen, produces pollen, which goes to the female part of the flower and can interact with it and cause the ovary to be fertilized and a fruit to form. So pollen is very rich in protein. And pollen is very rich in phytosterols. And phytosterols are hormone-like compounds that are found in plants. People say, oh, I'm allergic to pollen. And it is certainly true that we can be allergic to pollen. And if you've ever seen a picture of ragweed pollen, it looks like some medieval torture device that you would see. You see when you look at it, you say, oh, no wonder it makes people sneeze. It's like you think, oh, you get that in your nose, and you sort of want to go sneeze, 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 and get it out of there. But the pollen that we're allergic to is not the pollen that we get from bees. Yes, it's both pollen from plants, but the pollen we're allergic to is wind-borne pollen, and the pollen that bees collect is not wind-borne pollen. So the idea that we could eat bee pollen and it would somehow help us to learn how to deal with the pollens that we're allergic to isn't necessarily as logical as it seems. Interestingly enough, it does seem to work, however.
Yes.
I don't know of any really good studies that have looked at it, but I certainly know that there are quite a few people with quite a few anecdotal stories about difficulties that they had had with allergies, and that working with the pollen has definitely been helpful to them. Have you heard any of those stories?
I am one of those stories.
Tell us about it.
It was just, well, when I first, I'm not from Virginia, and I live in Northern Virginia, which is basically a pollen bowl, the way it's shaped. It just collects. And my brother's very allergic, long story short, and I rent an apartment for my brother and his wife, so we live in the same building. And so his allergies get really bad. He gets shots, the whole thing. Anyway, Virginia is known for very harsh pollen for allergic people. And I hadn't experienced it before. I was, you know, not from around here. I got here. I just wanted to cut my nose off, and I started taking local honey, and it did work. It worked if I used it, especially in a preventative fashion, like if I started taking it about 2 weeks before the season really kicked in. And then I think I eventually just built a tolerance up. I you just live somewhere for a while and you adapt to it. But it was horrible whenever. And I was, you know, 40, and I'm 43 now. And I'd never experienced allergies like that before. And I was like, my God, people live like this?
Pollen itself is a really powerful anti-inflammatory.
Yeah.
And so we think that, you know, I think that you're absolutely right, that you have acclimated to where you're living, and so you don't have so many allergic reactions, and that the honey initially just damped down your inflammatory response.
Could have been. And I used both a raw honey that wasn't too local, but was from, not like in Maryland, and then I used one that was local, and both seemed to work okay, so you may be right about that. I'm just going to let you go from there.
You know, and I've heard people say that too. Well, you have to use, you know, pollen or honey from the area where you are, and I say, I don't think that you do. Pollen from the flowers of ryegrass is a traditional European remedy for men with urinary and prostate problems.
Hmm.
And again, it's because pollen is such a powerful anti-inflammatory. In a double-blind, placebo-controlled study, 69% of the men who took half a teaspoonful of beef pollen daily got relief from urinary problems associated with the prostate. That's as good as drugs.
Right.
Oh, dear, we have run out of time again.
Yeah, we're coming down to it here.
So we're going to have to come back yet another week and keep talking about bees and bee things, because we haven't even mentioned propolis or royal jelly or beeswax.
Oh, and I had a request just from a listener. This was just a listener message that said at some point, no rush, she said she listens regularly, that she would like for you to speak about garlic. So that was a message I got recently.
Well, I will definitely do that. I'm working right now on putting together a 3-unit, 12-lesson course on heart health. And each unit has 12 herbal monographs, and one of those is going to be on garlic.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. So I'll really be getting into garlic over the next few weeks or so, and then I will happily do a show or two about garlic for the Main Street Universe. Meanwhile, come and visit me at susanweed.com. Find my books at the Wise Woman Bookshop, and you can also check out what's going on where I'm traveling and teaching. I'm going to be on the West Coast this autumn, and a lot of interesting things going on, so come and visit. Thank you so much for being our leader of the Main Street Universe. We need you.
Oh, well, thank you very much. And thanks for calling me the leader.
You are. You brought us all together.
And it's been interesting. Like I said, people, we all need each other, right?
We certainly do.
Like bees in the... in the hive.
Bees in the hive, as we reweave the healing cloak of the ancients together.
All right. Well, thank you again, and have a great week.
Okay.
All right. And everybody, you've been listening to Green Magic, Green Medicine with your host, Susan Weed. And this
Oh,
universe.
You know, is my timer off? Do we still have more time?
There's about a couple minutes, yeah. There's about
just a couple of minutes. Okay.
4 minutes,
because
yeah.
My timer went off, and I thought,
okay.
It. We need it to end. But then I could tell that you were like kind of, So I'm happy to talk more.
Okay.
You know,
it's about 5 minutes.
For some
minutes.
Reason, my timer just must have been set to the wrong time. So tell me how much time we have.
I thought you were just ready.
No.
Okay.
No, but, you know, faulty timer here. How much time do we actually have? 3 minutes, did you say?
Literally
two,
about...
One, four,
about,
four, five?
Yeah, about four,
say
five.
What?
About four,
wonderful.
Five.
That's great. No, I really have, you know, so much more to share, but the timer
okay.
said it was time, so I said it must be time. I actually wanted to talk a little bit about beeswax. Because beeswax is something that is not in most people's lives. And it's one of those kind of interesting things that we get from bees that used to be extremely important. Now, most candles are made of petroleum. The petroleum byproduct, the wax of candles, is a petroleum byproduct. And they have actually found increased risk of lung cancer among people who burn petroleum-based candles.
Oh, that's depressing.
Isn't it, though? Because they say it's kind of like having a little car engine in your house.
Yeah.
You know? And it's like, whoa, because we don't really think about it. I mean, I've made candles. I know, you know, I know that it's a synthetic wax. And so wonderfully, blessedly, there are people making candles out of things other than petroleum byproducts now. There's soy candles and palm wax candles, both of which I like a lot because I love to burn candles. So they're all are alternatives available to us. But in previous centuries, those things weren't available either. There wasn't soy oil to make candles from. There wasn't, you know, palm plantations to get that much palm wax to be able to make candles out of it. What people used was beeswax. Certainly they also burned oil. There were oil lamps.
Butter.
And there were a variety of fuels. But when you wanted, shall we say, a kind of human-sized light, it's a candle that you want. And beeswax is such a lovely way to get that light. Beeswax candles are very expensive, but I always try to have at least one beeswax candle nearby that I can light for very special things. And again, to get that sweet smell and that sweet memory. Herbalists use a lot of beeswax because we use it to thicken herbal oils and to turn them into ointments. I was getting off an airplane once, and the woman behind me said, "Dear, your suitcase is dripping." Obviously, this was a long time ago where you were still allowed to take liquids in your carry-on luggage. And indeed, a bottle of oil that I had with me had come open because the difference in pressure when we go up and go down in the airplane and was all over everything. And so I, like many others before me, learned my lesson, which is get some beeswax into those oils and stiffen them up into an ointment so they don't get all over everything. Some people, some of my teachers, felt that the beeswax was a very important emollient and that by adding the beeswax to the herbal oil, that there was an increased transfer of the herbal material through the skin. I don't personally think that. And as a matter of fact, I've seen a few situations in which the oil was very healing to something that going on in the skin. But when the person put an ointment on that was thickened with beeswax, that seemed to almost seal it in a way that wasn't really healthy for the skin. I certainly still use beeswax for my ointments, but more and more I prefer to make my ointments in animal fats, which are solid at room temperature. But as soon as they're applied to the skin, liquefy, they're very stable. And it doesn't give me that worrisome feeling that I have had since I had those couple of situations in which the beeswax really seemed to hold bacteria or to hold inflammation into the skin. It's nice, for the reasons I said, to have your ointment be solid. But
right.
It's not so nice if that beeswax really interferes with your skin's ability to breathe. And I can understand that it might for some people.
Right. But now, Susan, we are out of time.
All right. Then next week we will return and we'll talk about propolis and royal jelly.
All right. Thank you so much for joining us again.
Be sweet and have sweet memories. Till next week.
Absolutely. And sweet dreams. Lots of crazy dreams recently.
Oh, all right.
That's always I think it's fun. I've always been a powerful dreamer.
Oh, good. Okay, maybe next week you'll tell us about some of them.
Okay.
All right. Maybe you'll dream about bees. Who knows?
Okay. Thank you very much. Have a great evening.
Forbidden archaeology, forgotten history, divination, magic, cryptozoology, UFOs, nature, science, and spirit. All this and more right here on the Main Street Universe Radio Network.